On the Bookshelf with your host, Dave Doc Kirby.
Well, it's a great delight to welcome back to On the Bookshelf one of my favorite authors, one of my favorite people, Bill Myers, a guy that you probably know, even if you're not familiar with the name, and if you're not, shame on you. You certainly remembered him from the McGee and Me series and from My Life As series, The Blood of Heaven, The Face of God, Eli. He has won 70 national and international awards, including a C.S. Lewis Honor Award. He is also the managing partner of Ameris Media International, and they do some pretty cool stuff, too. We talked maybe 2 months ago, right, Bill?
Yeah, I think so.
About a new young readers book, a new series for tweeners, and now this is a new series for adults, and we don't say that because it means it's going to have a lot of offensive language or something. We just mean the grown-up people. But cleverly enough, it's called Child's Play. The Last Fool series by Bill Myers. This is book one, and it's from Ameris Media International Publication. Bill, welcome back.
Well, thanks. It's good to be back.
I enjoyed this book a great deal. And yes, the question did come to my mind. Surely Bill hasn't had time to do research on what it's like to be in a mental institution by actually being in one, because you write so many books that you wouldn't have had time to be institutionalized.
Well, you haven't been around my household.
What gave you this idea? It's always the tricky thing about a novel, because you don't want to give the ending away. Mm-hmm. But we got to get them. We have to pique their interest without giving things away.
Well, you know, I'll tell you why I wanted to write it.
Okay.
I mentor high school kids and I mentor college kids, all of them Christian, and all of them very frustrated, even angry, with Christianity. They've been sold a false bill of goods that the media has been brilliant at painting by always covering the nut cases of the Christians that are really the extremists, and they're pretty certain that God, in fact, there was a poll taken where the majority of people felt that God was an angry old man shuffling around just waiting to pour out his wrath on us.
Mm.
And I thought, gracious me, what misrepresentation. So I thought, now how can I realign that thinking for both the Christian and the non-Christian, and always the best way of preaching without getting caught is using comedy.
Yes.
So that was the first thing. It had to be a funny book. It had to be something that you could give to your non-Christian friend. And yes, there's the gospel in it, but it's funny enough and it's entertaining enough where they don't feel they're being preached at. But I also wanted to reach that Christian that had been growing jaded, that secretly thought that God dislikes them. So that was the beginning. And the premise of the book, it takes place about 50 years in the future. Religion has been banned. And you're right, it takes place in a mental health facility, but not the type that you and I think of. This is a place where they put people that have spiritual gifts, but they don't quite work just right because they don't know what they are. And I got characters like, there's this seer who has delightful conversations with tattoos and electric shavers and janitorial supplies, carries on wonderful conversations, and is crazy.
Yes, yes. Yes,
burn. We have a wannabe superhero who's complete with a shower cap and the goggles and the bath towel cape. And a prophet, she's one of my favorites, who sees 20 seconds into the future. She, which comes in really, is really embarrassing when they're playing Uno with her. Because she'll yell, Uno, and they'll look at her cards and go, sweetheart, you've still got two cards left. Well, no, she doesn't, not 20 seconds into the future. Or somebody will say, look out, or she'll yell, look out, and nobody will know what's going on, and, you know, 20 seconds later, somebody gets hit by. Amidst all that craziness, one of the patients opens up a fortune cookie that has been mysteriously planted, and the fortune in the cookie simply says, you are my favorite child, God. And they begin thinking about this. And digesting it, is this really true? His favorite, and if you're his favorite child, and if he's God, then that means he's infinite, and everybody is his favorite. And they don't know it, but as they explore this comically often, they begin to recreate Christianity. They begin to go back to a God that loves us so much that he gave his son for us. instead of a God that's waiting to punish us. They start to explore a God that loved us while we were sinners, not while we got perfect, but loved us in all of our idiosyncrasies and problems, loved us anyway, and didn't see what was wrong with us, but what was missing. So that's a long answer to a short question, but that was the method of my madness.
Well, I love the fact that you've taken a situation, by putting it in 50 years in the future, that gives you some leeway. And apparently there's been a massive war between different religions. And I'm thinking, considering the enmity that is between Islam and Christianity in the Middle East, say, and in Indonesia and outlying areas in the Philippines and so forth, and parts of in Afghanistan and Pakistan and so forth, that's not an unreasonable expectation. There have been wars between the Christians and the Muslims ever since the Muslims arose in the 8th century. That's not unrealistic. But what happens in the aftermath is that essentially we go to where it seems that we are in the public square these days. You can have any faith you want to, just don't tell anybody about it, and don't try to proselytize anybody, because if you do, then you're considered to be crazy, and they put you away.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know what it's like in your neck of the woods, but out here on the West Coast in Southern California, people really scowl at you if you say Merry Christmas.
Really? So we're the buckle in the Bible Belt. So,
well, you probably get away with it.
Yeah,
for now,
we do.
But
yeah.
You know, what happens in California eventually filters its way across the nation.
Yeah, that's the truth. There, one of the characters is trying desperately to deal with this kind of religious dichotomy. He's from a Middle Eastern background. This is Dr. Adil. And one of the patients in this sanitarium is apparently Jamal. It's still pretty convinced that he wants to follow the laws of Islam, and that puts him sort of on the outs with a lot of the others, especially when Max and the others start talking about being a child of God.
Yeah, and during much of that, I'm showing the difference between Christianity as a philosophical religion and true Christianity, which has to deal with a relationship with a loving God. You know, I was back in Turkey several years ago researching another book, and I was way in the back hills, and one of the merchants had a little New Testament that he was selling. It was a ancient, old book. He wasn't selling it for religious reasons, and I figured, well, that was a good place to start up a conversation.
Yeah.
And you know, we talked a little bit about Christianity. He talked a little bit about Islam, and he said a remarkable thing. He said, Your religion, it makes no sense. I said, what do you mean? He says, in our religion, 1 + 1 = 2. If you sin, you pay for it, and that's the end of the equation. He said, but in your Christianity, 1 + 1 = 1 billion. You can sin, and this God forgives you, and then you can sin again, and then he can forgive you. He said, that's not logical. And I got to thinking about that, and I had to agree, and I said, you know, you're right. Love is not logical. It is not logical for the creator of the universe to kill his only son so that he can have fellowship with us. But you're right. Love is illogical. And then, unable to keep my mouth shut, I said, I think there might be another difference between our faiths, too. And he said, well, what's that? Oh, and as this is happening, by the way, other shopkeepers are starting to gather around.
Right.
And I'm not very good at public debating, and I don't want to do that, but we'd sort of put my foot in my mouth already, so I had to finish it. I said, I think there's one other difference. And he said, what's that? And I said, is God your friend? And I tell you, Doc, he turned about 20 shades of crimson and just sputtered, this is blasphemy. This, you know. And I realized that I had stepped over the line. And I said, well, that's another difference, because God is my friend. Now I better be going. And I sort of disappeared through the crowd. But
wisely.
It's so... What I tried to do in the book was show the difference between religions, every religion, and Christianity, which is about friendship and sonship and daughtership with the creator of the universe. And we, in the marketplace, we get lumped in with all these philosophical, theological beliefs about God, and completely forget that it has to do with my being his son.
The phrase that gets tossed out there is that all roads lead to God. And And that is really an insult to all religions, not just to Christianity, but to all of them, because it's saying that all of your faith is so shallow that there really isn't any difference except where you were born, and that's why you followed this faith or that faith. And it's an insult to Hindus, who have very different belief structure than Christians do, mm-hmm. and to Muslims, whose belief structure is very different than ours. Even though we have some commonality, certainly, just as we have with Judaism. But if you're a neo-pagan, then you don't even want to get to God, perhaps. If you're an atheist, you don't even believe there's a God. So obviously all paths don't lead to God, or everybody would somehow find their way there. And that's one of the things that I hear. And working on a college campus, I hear that kind of thing from time to time. And I gently say, no, that's not true. Let's find some colleagues who have different beliefs than Christianity, and let's ask them if they think that we're all equal, that we're all equally valid. A Hindu might say, well, in a sense, we all are, because what you call Jesus, we call something else. But they don't believe in heaven.
Yeah.
They believe in reincarnation, and reincarnation with no real learning curve. You know, if reincarnation is true, it's a waste of lives, because you never learn anything. You never get to carry over the knowledge you gained from the first life you screw up, so that you'll do better in the second life.
And it's an incredible act of pride. In fact, all religions now are about working our way into God's good graces by being good, well-behaved people.
Right.
Whether you call it karma, or whether you call it nirvana or whatever, and Christianity says no, it has nothing to do about working your way into God's favor. God adores you even when you're a filthy sinner. He adored the world. That's why he died on the cross while the world was still filthy sinners. And by Christ paying for all of my mistakes, I'm clean. I'm his favorite son. You're his favorite son. It doesn't happen because we want it to happen. It happens because he paid a huge price. But he paid that price because he loves us, not because we were being good and well-behaved and earning, God points.
Right. Celestial green stamps.
Exactly.
I was talking with a Muslim student just yesterday, and we were talking. Politically is a moderate. He's worked for peace in his home nation and everything, and he's grown up with Jews and Christians, and he's fine with everybody. He doesn't agree with everything we believe, certainly, but he doesn't refute our right to believe differently from him. So we were able to have a really open dialogue, and I said, one of the things I think that many Muslims don't really understand is the relationship between the Father, the Son, and the Spirit. I said, we don't think they're three distinct beings, like three different people standing side by side, but they are distinct personalities within the Godhead. I said, and we use the phrase Father and Son, not because he begat Jesus like Zeus would begat Hercules or something, but because that's the relationship that is the model that he gives us for relating to him.
Yeah, well said. And it just keeps coming back to relationship, to sonship, to daughtership, to friendship. I counted at least 18 times in Scripture we're called the bride. Now that is an intimate relationship. Not the old lady, not the old ball and chain, not the wife, but the bride. That type of adoration that the Lord has for us. And we've been taught, I think, a type of false humility where we said, oh, I'm a lowly worm, and I need to be pulverized under God's feet. And God says, even before I saved you, I loved you enough to kill my son for you. Now that is love. And now that you're saved, now that you're on the other side of the cross, get over yourself and be who I called you to be. Yeah. And a lot of the kids I work with are stuck on the wrong side of the cross. They're like, oh, I'm just lucky to be saved. No, that's the beginning of your walk.
Right.
Get on the other side and start kicking Satan butt.
Yeah. Yeah. In case you're just joining us, we're talking to my buddy Bill Myers. His new book, Child's Play, it's the first book in his Last Fool series, and it's from Amaris Media International Publication, and it is a Jerry B. Jenkins Select book, by the way. I think there's one of the characters here, I believe it's Bernie, who's talks to inanimate objects and so forth, and he has a dream where he is being smoldered by boulders, and smothered by boulders, there you go, and he hears the voice of his roommate Max, who's in a sense is the main character, or at least of all the human beings is the main character, this amnesiac who had been a fashion mogul and who opened the fortune cookie and it changed his life. And he hears the voice of Max calling to him, listen for the music, and you can have the strength to overcome the boulders. I love this dream because they keep razzing him and making fun of him and so forth. But the more he listens to the music, the more he is strengthened to overcome, and he's overcoming a life filled with regret and sin and brokenness, and not his own strength, but the strength of God.
Yes, and coming from his worship, from his adoration of God. We have this film company that, as you can imagine, is meeting a few obstacles here in Hollywood.
I can imagine.
By trying to do projects for the general market that talk about God. There's a great place for the Christian films for the Christians, but we're trying to invade the general market and not dilute God from the message. So you can imagine the wonderful walls that we hit on a daily basis.
Yeah.
But the wonderful thing about at least half of my team, if one of us gets worked up or worried about a situation, just turns to the other half of the team and says, I think it's time we adore. So in the worst possible, we had a situation 2 weeks ago where the camera failed and we had a sound stage and the money was going through the sieve like water.
Yeah.
And my partner said, okay, let's just sit back for a moment and worship God and adore him. That's our job. And see what happens. And what happens was somebody just happened to be in the sound stage that had the microphone that we needed, and it all worked out. But it was because we sought the kingdom of God first.
Right.
You know, it was I'm finding that in my life, the process is more important than the product. Yes, we want a good book. Yes, we want a good film. But you know, something more than that, we want it to be a father-son project where we're hanging out with the Father, doing it together in relationship, not as slaves that have to run out and, you know, try to change the world on our own.
I think that's really important. I'm a musician, and we have a certain feeling that we want to give of our best to the Master. But if we are grimly intent on doing it, then we're missing the whole point. A brilliantly executed piece of music that has no joy in it is not an offering to God. It, in a sense, it's just a self homage. If we're gonna play something for Jesus, we shouldn't worry so much about getting all the notes right as we should worry about getting the spirit right in it.
Yeah. Back to this audition. It was about a 3-hour audition. Child actors were coming in. This I have a book series called My Life As that we're gearing up to do as a feature film.
Right.
So we had these kids coming in, and in an audition situation, everybody's usually very frightened and very territorial. They all move to different corners of the lobby,
right,
practicing their lines and scowling at each other. And we purposely brought in a mother of one of the kids that I mentor. And her job was to offer milk and cookies and to chat and just to create an atmosphere of love.
Oh.
And I'd pop out of the soundstage and go into the lobby from time to time just to say hi to the kids. And, you know, we didn't find the actor that we wanted. We spent 3 hours, did not find the actor, but every parent left, leaving word with our receptionist that they had never felt so accepted and so loved and had never had such an enjoyable experience in an audition than with us.
Wow.
And that, to me, was the victory.
Yes. Yes, and you know, they are going to leave that place thinking, well, it would have been nice to get the job because these are really nice people, but isn't it wonderful that we were treated with kindness, we were treated as the children of God, and rather than just another commodity to be dealt.
Yeah, and they, you know, it's terribly dark out here as you can imagine, but just looking at what's on TV.
Yeah.
And some of these kids have, you know, we talked to one 12-year-old boy who was excited because he was up for an award because he played a transsexual. Mm. A transsexual 12-year-old boy? Yes. Really? And they're expecting these child actors to play this sort of
and not be affected
ugliness.
By it? Yeah.
And so for them to, for us just basically to wrap our arms around them and say, you know, we don't care what you've done. Just left them breathless, because as soon as they heard it was a Christian company, a lot of them thought, oh, brother, here comes the judgment. Here comes the, you know, the we better change our ways or whatever.
Right.
And all they got from us was the love of Christ, and I think that's going to make a huge difference. And like I said, we didn't find our actor, but I think we accomplished something more important.
Yeah, I think so, too. Talking to Bill Myers, if you want to find out more about his books, including his newest one, Child's Play, from the Last Fool series, it's book number one from Ameris Media International Publications, just go to his website, which is, cleverly enough, BillMyers.com.
And how do you spell that name?
Yes, truly. That's with only one E.
M-Y-E-R-S, that's right. We make it simple.
And that's good because we're a simple people. Something you said earlier about getting scowled at when you say Merry Christmas out there on the West Coast. It's funny to me because there are people who say we should say Happy Holidays. And of course, holiday is a contraction of holy day. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to have a holy day, there has to be someone to compare it to that makes it holy or that can contrast it to an unholy day. And so there you go. Even if they say holiday, they don't realize it, but they're mentioning God anyway.
Yeah, or even in Thanksgiving. I'm sorry, who are you thanking?
Yeah, yeah. To whom are you thankful? What is that? I grew up on the East Coast down in Florida, and I had a lot of Jewish friends, and some of them had Christmas trees up because it was a cultural thing for them. But when it came time to perform at school or whatever, they played and sang Christmas carols with us and didn't take it personally. They said, you know, I'm not getting converted by singing your carols, but you understand our faith. And I said, absolutely. And I said, I have no problem if we sang a Hanukkah song. And that was before Adam Sandler and wrote his brilliant piece on Hanukkah. It seems to me that they always felt like if I wished them a Merry Christmas, that I wasn't saying, because if you don't worship Christ, you're going to burn in hell. I was just saying, I hope that your time is a wonderful time, and I'm filled with this joy and gratitude because I know Jesus.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that is as much the mission statement of myself as an author or as a film producer as anything else, and that is showing the joy and the love of Christ. And spreading that on. You know, it's the goodness of the Lord that leads to salvation, not the scowl and the pruny wrinkled face,
right.
And the toe tapping. It's the goodness. It's the wooing of a crippled culture into wholeness. It's not telling a crippled culture they're crippled. I think they already know that.
Yeah. I look at the examples of Jesus in the Bible when he healed a woman who'd had the bloody discharge for a dozen years, and he said, today she is a daughter.
Yeah.
And that was as important to her as the physical healing was, the realization that she was back in the covenant.
Yeah, absolutely. Now imagine... Imagine all of that serious theology, trying to put it in a book or in a movie. And that's why the comedy element in my writing is so important, because it can really become weighty. If I can get you to chuckle and laugh at the people, not necessarily what they believe, but how they say it.
Yes.
A lot of times defenses go down and people continue to read because they're enjoying it. They don't feel like they're sitting through a 300-page sermon.
I'll give you a perfect example from Child's Play, and that's a situation where Bernie, who believes that inanimate objects, including tattoos, speak to him, they're having a meal, and he turns around and accidentally bumps into Jamal, who is not usually get along with him anyway, and spills food on his shirt. For that instant, we all hold our breath and think, oh my gosh, this is going to be really bad. But what ends up happening is that Max finds a way to diffuse the situation by turning it into a food fight that everybody joins into gleefully. And I thought, what a great way of handling this. What an intuitive way of taking a tense situation, leveling the playing field, and bringing us back to joy. And isn't that what Jesus is all about?
Yeah, well said. Well said. You know, there is absolutely a place for repentance. There's absolutely a place for going, I cannot do this on my own anymore. But I tell you, we have a God that sings over us. We have a God that delights over us. We have a God that adores us. Maybe we should let the world know that he's there and really wants to pour out his love with them once they get rid of their sins by giving them to Jesus.
Mm, absolutely. Bill, where do people find copies of your new novella, Child's Play?
Well, right now we have a tricky situation. The publisher is letting me sell the books on my website about 4 or 5 months ahead of time.
Okay.
Eventually they'll get in the stores and the Amazon.com. But for the next 2 or 3 months, the only place you can get them would be at my website.
Oh, interesting. But they can get them at your website right now.
Yeah, they sure can.
Excellent.
And there's there's also a couple sample chapters there, just in case they're trying to figure out, wait a minute. Oh, what do you mean? You're talking about serious stuff and trying to make me laugh at the same time. So
yes.
There's a couple sample chapters there just to help them with the process.
Excellent. Well, I tell you, there are two pages in here that are so wonderful. And so if you buy the book, when you get to pages 100 and 101, where Max is talking and explaining to Bernard how fabric sometimes has ugly, dark threads that run through it, and if you step far enough back, you realize that those threads have to be in there to make the fabric beautiful, and that's the difference between run-of-the-mill cloth and genius artistry, the use of ugly threads to create the great masterpiece. And he goes on to say, the question isn't why am I created the way I am. No masterpiece would ever ask that. The question is how. How can I use the way I've been woven? How can I implement it to portray my great beauty? How can I display it to demonstrate the artist's genius and unfathomable love? That is beautiful. That's great stuff, Bill.
Thank God.
Yeah, so,
in fact, and the next line in the book, I believe one of the characters said, I think I read that in a children's book once.
Yes.
And then she says, on the planet Feyre, I wrote that very thought in a children's book years and years ago.
Oh,
called
really?
Journeys to Feyre. So I figured, that's so good, I want to include it again.
Nice, nice. Little sly reference to a previous book. Very
yep.
Cool. Bill Myers, my good friend, and we're delighted to have you with us again on the bookshelf. His new book is Child's Play. It's the first book in the Last Fool series from Ameris Media International Publication. You can get it from his website right now, BillMyers.com. And for the next couple of months, you can get it there. And I think people will be delighted by it. It's a great read. It's a lot of fun. It's not a long, involved book, but the characters are fascinating and a lot of twists and turns and surprises and joy to be found here.
Great.
Well, Bill, thank you again for joining us. And I hope that you and yours have a very Merry Christmas and that the next year God will continue to use your words to bless others as you have been used for, lo, these many years.
Oh, well, thank you, and the same to you. You're on the front lines there. I'm kind of hiding behind the computer. You're right out there. So the Lord bless you and strengthen you for the upcoming year as well.
Thank you, my brother. Take care, and God bless.
You too.
And once again, his website, Bill Myers, MYERS.com. Thanks so much for joining us on the bookshelf this weekend. We'll see you right here on your favorite radio station again next time. Until then, I'm your host, Dave Doc Kirby. Thanks for listening, and God bless.